This interview of Carmen Iannarri is being made for the Haverford College Oral History Program on the 19th of March, 1997. The interviewer is Michael Freeman.
No.
I've got it. Well, thank you for coming. Carmen, how did you come to work at Haverford College?
Well, it's... when I came here from Italy, I only worked about 3 months, and so I was not qualified for disability, for not disability, for unemployment, and so I had to look for something where I could survive the winter, just like the soldier in Washington, Valley Forge. And the job became available over here, and I came here basically just to work for the winter.
And, what year was that?
It was in 1956. So I came here in October 29, 1956. And, well, when the spring came, I was looking for a job outside the college, basically with Conrad. And the pay was maybe like 15, 20 cents a different an hour. And when I put it all together, you have to, some of those contracts, you might have to travel 2 hours a day, you know, go to the job and back, and I figured, well, it's not worth, you know, the difference. Mm-hmm. And that's how I began to stay here. And basically every spring I get the feeling I should leave. but I'm still here.
Who hired you?
At the time, the man was in charge of the ground was Mr. Walter, his nickname Slim. He lived next door where I lived, in the Martin Avenue up in Bryn Mawr. Mm-hmm. And he used to see me around, and there was a gentleman named Lou de Bernardine. He was a part-time watchman here, and Lou knew me. And mm-hmm. He asked me if I want a job down the college. Basically, he asked me to come to work here. And it was, you know, it was just what I was looking for, and I was lucky to get a job.
What did they have you do? What was your job?
I was just plain groundsman, because when I came to work for the college, I couldn't speak no English at all. I still got lots to learn yet, but it's funny, the first Monday morning when I came to work, everybody went, and they were all, there were black people working for the ground. I was the first white man that got a job on the ground. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it was somebody else, but when I went there, there was just... And so I saw the people grabbing a shovel, and I grabbed a shovel. And they all kind of kicked me around. Nobody wanted me, like. But not because they didn't want me. They just... I wasn't going with the right person.
Right.
And so then Slim gave me a... told me to go with this... a guy named Perry McDaniel. His nickname was Bobo. Everybody knew him by Bobo, not by Perry. Okay. And so I went with Perry McDaniel, and you know, I think the first job I did was alongside the field house. Now it's just ground, and it used to be the old parking lot, and there was this island where the light is in. Mm-hmm. We grade them, because there was a new, the field house was just finished that year. And we had the grade and seeded, and it was my first.
But you were the first white. You were the only white employee.
When I came here, yes, I was the only white in the ground department.
And the same thing was true with housekeeping. It was predominantly African American, except for the some women, I think, who worked in the rooms.
Yeah, basically that's what it was. Yes.
So grounds and housekeeping were predominantly African American workers at that time.
But with the maintenance, now they were all white.
Right.
See. So
at that time?
At the time,
at the time. So maintenance was...
The people that trade, they were all white, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, they were...
The carpenters.
The carpenter, the plumber, the electrician.
But groundsmen and housekeeping were
Right.
Did Aldo Caselli have anything to do with your arrival, or did you meet him?
I met Aldo Caselli. I think Aldo Caselli, he had what I understood. He had something to do, talk to Slim and everything. We wanted to get some Italian in here. They're good worker.
Okay.
So maybe he did
put a good
he
word.
Did have something to do with the recruit, because after I started work, then Vince DeSanta, he got the job as a painter. Actually, he was supposed to get my job, but he didn't want the job because he paid less money. He was smarter than I was. And then Tony Valenti, he worked here, bless his soul. He, poor guy, died pretty young. And it's nice gentleman. And after that, we had Pat Labriciosi. He worked for about a couple of years.
This was in
grounds? In grounds, yeah, holding grounds. And we became aware, and it's not that the other people were, they retired. A lot of the black people retired from the job, and some, they were too, and they were nice at Ellie. They were nice people to work with. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun. They taught me how to speak English. Some of them taught me they taught me the good words, some of the bad words, but whatever, you learn, see?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what was my aim, to be able to communicate with people.
Right at that time. Who was in charge of Physical Plant at that time? Is it, I have names that Miss Nugent ran housekeeping.
Right.
Did she have anything to do with grounds at all?
No.
So Slim ran the grounds crew?
When I came here, the way I understood was, Mr. Cassell was the controller.
Right.
So everybody would report to Mr. Cassell. He ran the college at the time, I guess. Mm-hmm. So Slim was in charge of grounds, the powerhouse, the heat, mm-hmm. and watchman, the security department. That was his side. Mr. Nugent was the housekeeping. And Bud Robert, he was for the carpenter and a plumber and a painter.
Right.
So that's the way it was set up.
Your equipment was housed near the old powerhouses now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you had a little shed there
tractors. There was a garage. They were, mm-hmm. matter of fact, there was that garage was only about a year old, mm-hmm. when I got here. But I understood at the time that the ground department met underneath the Lloyd, in the basement of Lloyd, because we still went up there and got some tools. We're still down there.
Right. Maintenance was up in Guest.
Maintenance was in Guest. Yeah, I guess they always been there for a long time.
So you were separated, really, physically.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Were they really separate departments, grounds and maintenance, and housekeeping? I mean, were they really separate, or did they work as one department?
I do not know the administration end of the deal, but it looked like each one, dealt with their own department. There was more like, that's a carpenter department. We don't bother with them, today we're a little more together, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
How were the working relationships between, people in grounds, and also between grounds and, let's say, housekeeping and maintenance? Were there competitions, or did people get along very well?
I don't think it was any. Yeah, I think, I got along with everybody. I had a good friend in the carpenter department, mm-hmm. and I had a good friend in the housekeeping. Mm-hmm. I got along with people, mm-hmm. yeah.
But were there tensions between?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think there was that much tension. There wasn't such a thing, just because you work for ground, I think people got along pretty well. That's the way I saw, anyway.
Yeah, I heard you, and you worked on Saturday too, didn't you?
We worked 48 hours a day, a week, and that's like when I came here. I didn't get no vacation after I was almost 2 years here.
Mm-hmm. And you got paid by the hour.
Paid by the hour, so you miss 1 hour, you don't get paid. So there was a. It was a long week.
And you didn't live on campus. People in housekeeping, some of them did.
Yeah, some people in housekeeping. I think, I don't know if they were all or not, but they had like a dorm up on the
right.
guest upstairs.
Yeah. Crowns people didn't live on campus.
Not on campus.
Let me ask you about the equipment that you used and the methods that you used to maintain the grounds. How are they different then in the 50s and the 60s with what you do today to maintain the grounds? Yeah, tell me a little about that.
It's quite a bit different. We We had one dump truck, two tractors that were like 1951 and 1950 tractor, and we had an old, what we call the water wagon, we used to spray trees, and basically one big gang mower that we cut the grass with, it was pulled by the tractor, and all another big it's called the chopper, there was. We pulled by the one the tractor to do the rough field like, and that's basically what we had. The rest was done by a hand mower. And my first year here, that's what I did. I did trimming. Cause, you know, I was the newest one. You had the no. Sheep shear.
You didn't have any electric equipment.
No, there was cut the hedge. They had an old electric hedge cut. It was small and didn't do much cutting. I'd rather use the hand one because it was better. So far, we had no chainsaw. We had an electric chainsaw that if you went up the trees, you had to drag a 100-foot cord that weighed about 200 pounds, and with the generator. And what happened to me a couple of times, I got everything set up. I tied the rope. I climbed the trees because I used to do some of the tree work, and get on top of the trees, and I forgot to start the generator. So now you have to go back down and, you know, start to generate if you want to use the chainsaw, or you just choose to use it by hand.
And I take it some of this equipment didn't work all the time.
It didn't work all the time, you know.
And they didn't buy new equipment every year.
No, I never saw them buy much new equipment. As a matter of fact, they didn't buy any shovel. I used to get my good shovel in the summertime when Conrad was around. They'd be leaving the shovel stand someplace, and I would take it back to the shop. And then they want to know, where did I get the new shovel? So.
Yeah. Did, tell me a little bit about how you fertilized in those days.
We didn't have any fertilization program at all. Mm-hmm. We did very little right on Founders Green. Mm-hmm. Maybe we bought maybe a ton of fertilizer, the most. But what I can say, them days and today's what we had, it's better than it wasn't today, is our tree program. We fertilize every trees on the camps on all winter long. Mm-hmm. We were out there with this big drill, make a hole, and put about 6-7 ounces of fertilizer in each hole, and we did fertilize all the trees, which we're not doing today.
So you had a lot of, you didn't have very good lawns, but you had very healthy trees.
We had, and I think that's why we still have a good healthy trees around the camps. Uh-huh. So we did something that we don't do today.
Did you get the fertilizer from Delaware County? Did you get Maloganite?
I heard
I think Jim Brinkley's interview that they used to get the fertilizer. They didn't buy the fertilizer. They'd get the fertilizer from was sewage, I think.
That was from the Aberforth Township sewer refinery or whatever would you call it. Mm-hmm. And that came raw basically, you know, right out of the belt. And they were wet, and that's another job in the wintertime we did is spray that mill organized.
Did it work? Was it effective, sir, for lawns?
Well, in the spring of the year, you would have a beautiful green lawn, but actually, over the year, it ruined our lawn.
I see.
Because you build up so much of that compost, mm-hmm. all the grass was grown on the top, and you could basically pick up the grass like a big mat. And so we had to stop using and do a lot of aerify and try to get the roots of the grass back down deep.
Right.
But that dump over here, we had a great big pile, you know, stockpile we used for different mm-hmm. use. But that was one job on the winter. It was a nasty job.
Right.
Yeah, that's because it was heavy, you know, you just like spraying mud. And sometimes 6-7 load a day. That was one of the thing, and we still did snow removal in the winter time. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a gravelly to do the walks.
Yeah, how'd you remove snow? Was it
shovel?
Shovel it.
Yeah.
You have something on the road? Did you?
Well, we on the road. Like I said, the tractor had a plow, and this old truck had a plow, which wasn't worth much. And but the two tractors, we did the road. If we got really a big heavy snow, we had to get Conrad in to clean the road. But a lot of the walks, it was done all by hand. Mm-hmm. And it was hard work. And We did a lot of hard work them days.
Yeah. Now you worked all year round. You didn't take the summers off like the I think people in housekeeping.
Yeah.
They went off to work in the Poconos and hotels. Right. But you worked all year round, didn't you?
Well, I think the kitchen used to close in the summer.
Right, in the kitchen.
And they went to work at the place. No, grounds where there was 12 months out of the year work. Yeah, we worked all the time. There was no layoff.
Did you have, tell me a little bit about when you started in the early years, about the contacts between students and people in grounds. Mm-hmm. Were there a lot more contacts then than there are today?
We always had the student work. You know, in the summertime we hired a student, mm-hmm. and we had a good relation. I mean, I developed some good friends. Some of the people stayed in touch with me for a while. Now I don't know, there were less students. You know, it seemed they got to know more, especially like if once I got to work with our trade department, I got to know a lot of students. Mm-hmm. I think today is a little more because it's more student and so.
Did you get to know the president of the college and the people who worked in the administration and the faculty? They have more? Yeah, I lived on campus.
Yeah, so. I got to know a lot more professors then than I did now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we became good friends. I can imagine them all, name them all. But mm-hmm. When I came here, I think it was Mr. White was just at the end mm-hmm. of his term.
Gilbert White.
Yeah, and then Mr. Borton took over, and he was a very nice man. Mm-hmm. He always, when he came out of the house, if you were working, walk by, say good morning, and talk to you, and mm-hmm. and one thing I remember, there was me and Tom at the time. We were doing the snow removal at Christmas time, and at the year, that's a little hard to remember, but we had a big snowstorm right at Christmas, and we plowed the snow from the night before through a whole day Christmas, mm-hmm. and he came out with 2 cup coffee, and he said, well. He said, this coffee is cold, but they warm you up. Uh-huh. I never forgot that. I figured, I said, how can he warm you up? But once we drank, had some help. And so that was very nice. People appreciate what you do. And I was a very good friend with Archie McIntosh.
Who was the acting president. The
acting president. And
Dean.
He was a legend in Haverford College. Mm-hmm. Jack Coleman,
Jim Brinkley said something about the students in the 50s and the 60s, which is interesting. He said that they spent more time outside in those days, and he says, today they seem to be spending more time inside buildings, and in the old days, he remembers them being just more outside. The campus was just seemed to have people walking on the grounds, and there were more games, and that's what he remembers. Do you, is that?
I don't know, maybe Jimmy, Jimmy was in the housekeeping, he saw things in a different way than I saw. I don't see that way. I saw students out then, they're out soon in the spring of the year, soon the weather gets better, they're all outside, have a class. And.
Yeah, he also talked about a lot of pranks that he had that he knew about on campus. They would move Volkswagens onto Founders Porch, and they hung a wash tub on top of a flagpole outside of Roberts. I mean, did you?
Do you remember stuff like that?
This is part of the folklore of Haverford, the great food fights and things. Right. But I wonder if you did you were you privy to any of these great pranks that students do?
I remember the Volkswagen story, in the dining room at the, Founder. At the time, their thing was we had two great big trees in the front of. I can't think of the name of the building now. And when the fruit came down in the fall, they would pick up the fruit and put them on the top of the table. And gingko trees, they smell pretty funny. And that wasn't too pleasant. In the spring of the year, we used to put brushes around to protect the area where we seed. And one particular year, they didn't like Mr. Cassell too much. They picked up every brush around the campus, we put it down, you know, around the walkways and area where we seated, and stacked on the front door of Mr. Cassell. He couldn't get it. So we come in the morning, and slams the, I think we have to go rescue the Kumba. We couldn't believe. And they still do a little bit today, but them days they used to do a lot, like throw all the toilet paper on trees, decorate the trees with toilet paper.
Okay.
I mean, I think they did more crazy things them day than they do today. But I think they were all in fun.
They were all in fun. And you were, people, well, you didn't take it personally or, you know.
No, I never did. One thing I remember, one year during the snowstorm one night, we went home, we cleaned the snow all day, and we seemed to get a little more snow than we did now. And about 1 o'clock, I get a phone call from Mr. Cassell. Say, come on down, and we have to open a road. And I said, what road? We left all nice and clean. And what the student did, they built a wall in between Union and Lloyd. You know, we have the two stone columns. And I'm telling you, they built that wall maybe like 6 feet wide with snow, all the way up. And he felt that, you know, in case of fire or something, the fire truck would get through.
There was
a true way over there. And of course, them days now, that's later on, you know, in time where we did own a front end load. And so I came down and I got the front end load and started to scoop the snow out, and the student hollered at me, you know, to leave him alone. And so I just paid no mind. I had a bigger leather coat on me. And all I know what they did, because I didn't want to stop, you know, breaking the wall, they created this big snowball, and two guys came behind me. I didn't see and ram on me. I mean, they almost broke my back. And they felt bad afterward. They came over and apologized. And well, then I got a little bit hot, and I thought, they didn't get out of my way, they're going to get hurt. So I cleaned up the road, I opened the road up, and when I finished, the president of the student council came over and apologized. You know, he said, you know, you were here doing your job, and we should not have done that to you. And, but that was a funny night, because there was this old watchman, Bill, and Mr. Cassell. They were trying to control the crowd, and they snowballed both of them.
Nah.
And there was where they hit Mr. Cassell, right? He used to wear the little black beret around, like, you know, the French hat. And that hat flew right off his head. And then, so finally, you know, they give up. Mr. Cassell and the watchman, they walked away. They couldn't stay there no more.
That was it, huh? That was it.
So, I think that was a fun time, you know, if you look that way.
Yeah. Now, speaking about the winter, I understand that used to be in charge, I think this is right, that you were in charge of a skating shed.
Yeah.
And they used to charge a fee.
A fee to get into
skating. Tell me a little bit about the skating shed. And
well, that was the day when I think the pond froze for 3 months.
Yeah.
And today they don't. I don't know why, what's the reason.
That's
but
cold.
There was a procedure we did, like in November, we put a fence around,
mm-hmm.
a 6-foot fence.
Now, was it a pond when you were working there? It wasn't a meadow. During the off season, it always was a year-round pond.
Yes, always.
So one time it had been
one
a meadow.
One time, what I understood it was, yeah. But
yeah.
Now, since I've been here, there's always been
a pond.
Yeah.
So you put a fence around.
We put the fence all around so that we could control the people, and also there was two gates right in the front of the skating shed,
mm-hmm.
with we put these two ramps that go down to the water, with a little slat across so you could walk up and down. And we opened up, basically it was a business.
How much did you charge?
We charged 25 cents.
25, per person to skate on the pond?
We opened 10 o'clock in the morning to 5, then we'll be closed from 5 to 7, and then open again 7 to 10. Because, you know, you come back at 7 o'clock, you got different color ticket.
When did they stop doing that?
Well, basically because we didn't get ice no more.
Right.
And it wasn't worth. Like the last year, we had the fans around and down there. I think we only skated maybe a couple of days. Now, my opinion is that it's much salt that's used today. Years ago, township didn't use no salt. They used Sintris on the road. So now, when you hear how many tons, hundreds of tons of salt is sprayed out on the roadway, and that goes down to the creeks and down to a pond or whatever
around.
So it
doesn't freeze.
And that's my opinion. That's why we don't get much ice anymore. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of work. Every morning we had to scrape the ice. We had this gravelly with a snow plow and a scraper on the front. And if it was any cracks, any bump, we put a little water on, just like an ice rink. We maintain that. So, mm-hmm. And we had the big day we had 1 year was right the day after Christmas. What year? Back a few years. And we made $900, I think it was, somewhere around that, just in quarters.
So all these people skating
all
on the pump?
People. There were thousands of people on that. We had a car park all over Barkley Beach, all over Marion Field. It was hard, it was real cold.
Yeah.
And people, I don't know where they all came from. Mm-hmm. Now, 25 cents, I hate. They went through thousands of people on the ice that day, and there were so many. They were just I don't know how they skated, but
I've never seen that. Yeah. Did they rent out the skating shed?
Not that I know. Not for anything.
They just lit a fire in there.
Yeah, we went in. We have a big fire going, and we sold a little can of hot chocolate. A lot of people bought their own, And the people had a lot of fun.
Did they open on Saturday and Sunday?
We opened on Saturday and Sunday. That was open from 10 to the same schedule.
Were you working?
No, on Sunday. On Sunday, it's from 1 to 5. Yeah. Because,
but there was somebody there to take.
Yeah, sure. We opened at 1 o'clock, so we had to be there around 10 o'clock. It took about 2 or 2.5 hours to scrape and clean up, make the ice ready to use.
During the summer, did your department maintain the pond, dredge it and things like that?
No.
So how did they maintain?
Dredge the pond was done by Conrad.
And they did it. They would do that.
That's only in my time over here. Only been done twice.
Hmm.
So it's not something you do every year. It's basically like an average 25 to 30 years in between.
And I take it the ducks have been there ever since.
So the duck been there ever since.
Since.
We used to have a lot more white duck. I guess kids got more white duck at Easter than they do now. And then by the end of May, everybody will bring to the college pond,
mm-hmm.
And that's where they stayed.
Okay.
So it was a good experience, And I don't know what I did through the year I've been here. I don't think it's much in this college I didn't do. I helped plumber work. I worked in a powerhouse. Worked with a gentleman named Chip. He was in charge of the powerhouse.
This is the powerhouse where it is now?
Yeah, it's exactly the same building with a different type of boiler,
Right,
they were converted from coal to oil. And they had to be cleaned every summer because they use this heavy oil, which made a lot of carbon inside. And we had one boy was the newest one. To clean, you had to get it inside. It's like a big tube. And you go in with a chisel and chisel out all of the carbon from the oil.
Right.
And 1 year I'm doing that, and there I'm going to put it fine. And Chip wanted to help me to make me breathe a little better, and it was hot.
Yeah.
He took this big fan and put him right on the front, and he almost killed me.
Wow.
Because I stirred up all that dust in there, and he couldn't hear me this shot. And when I came out, I tell you, I almost passed out. But that I did work. I did watchman work.
So because security was part of Slim's
and,
operation.
Many time.
How many people?
Slim and under Tom Perrig, when he took over, we still had security for a long time.
How many people worked in security?
They had
it's like a fire watch.
One came on 8 o'clock to 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had one during the day. They had two full time. And Lou Corsi, of course, you heard about
right.
Lou Corsi. He's a legend in Haverford. He did a lot of the part-time and a lot of the watchman work. He was like a watchman, he was a groundsman, he was a powerhouse man. He worked on all those in different hours. Mm-hmm. My man was some. Mm-hmm. And he's a man that I admire a lot because he taught me a lot. Say on Swarthmore night when we played football, we're supposed to be out on Wharton Field and watch the kids from Swarthmore then come over and burn the grass and all that. And he'd be coming to talk to me, and I'd be there with a baseball bat in my hand, and he said to me, "What are you going to do with it?" I said, "Well, if they come," he said, "you really think you're going to hit somebody?" I said, "I don't know, Lou." Yeah. You know, Slim told me to be here. I said, "That man is crazy." He said, "Why don't you go sit someplace else?"
So you had to maintain the sports athletic fields, too.
Yes. Well, the ground was responsible. We didn't have anybody there all the time. Yeah. It was our job to prepare all the...
Yeah, to put the football, the lines on the football team,
the
and line, football
the,
games.
The numbers and
yeah.
all that. And that was a... Set up the number was a big operation because only a chip could do that. We use a spray, take a little compressor with us, and set up the number and spray them on. And once in a while, I would get chip, little makeup, put the foot upside down, you know. So we try to make fun. Like we set up the track for track meet. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a job because you had to drag and roll the track and then. Mm-hmm. Put all those white line around, and so I developed this little gadget. Took a piece of a 2x4, and I put nails down, and I would drag it around the track, make a little scratch, so I could make nice. Before they were doing like one man hold the tape near the curb, and one man tried to walk around. It took like three people. So I measured the thing and walk around one time with that. And then just file them a little scratch. So, I tried department. Still to today, that takes a lot of time. A lot of time, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Lou Corsi. Let me ask you about Tommy Parecka. And he was somebody who was there. He started in the 60s.
Tom started here exactly, I know when he started. He started in 1963, in May 63. He was brought in to replace Slim, because mm-hmm. Slim was near retirement age. And I was told I was supposed to have the job of the ground supervisor at the time. There were no manager or such thing. But I had a little misfortune in my life. Mm. There was a man work for me, for us in the college. I took him to the doctor because he had an x-ray done in them days. They had a van come around and take a health picture of people, see if they were sick and stuff like that. And they saw a spot on his lungs.
Mm. They did the tuberculosis
test. Right. Yeah. And so now I'm taking this man to the doctor to check what hand up was. He had pneumonia years ago and they leave a spot in your lung. But, you know, they have to follow through. In the meantime, I was having a problem of my own with kidney infection. So I'm going to a doctor, and this day I dropped Nick to the clinic, and I went to my doctor, and my doctor told me the bad news that I had tuberculosis in my kidney. And that kind of set my life back quite a bit. So I had... And that's when Mr. Cassell decided to bring somebody else in, because you know, I went away for a year, mm-hmm. and when I come back, Slim told him, well, you know, Carmen's healthy, and I think he should get the job, and he told him that I was at risk.
Because you had health.
Yeah, see, and so he said, you know, we can't take a chance. You see, in other words, the college, them day, they've done a lot for me. That's why maybe I'm still here today. Mm-hmm. I had three kids, two, and my wife was expecting the third one, where she was born while I was in a sanitarium. Mm-hmm. And with no money coming in, And
they didn't have a disability.
They didn't have another thing they have today. You know, the benefit them days was nothing. And so Slim talked to Cassell, my problem, and Cassell went to the board manager, and they paid me a half salary. And the check came to the charity, the Carmen Ioneer children. Huh. And so for that, I think I owed the college something, and I decided I'm going to work for the college.
So they helped your children?
Certainly did. There was, you know, there was no policy that they had to do those things.
And did you have a medical, you have medical benefits?
No,
because you went away for a year, did they have no medical?
Them day there was no medical benefit, nothing.
So you were on your own?
I was on my own. I had 31 days of, 31 or 32 days of sick days, because the year before, 2 years before, I had appendix removal, so I had to use some of my
sick days.
I'm not the type of person to use my sick days. But, you know, unfortunately, I had to use, and so once they paid me them 31 days, I was on my own. And, you know, I didn't have a rich family. My mother and father had just come over. They had five kids, still small, my brothers, and and my mother alone, her husband just died the year before, so she couldn't give us anything. She had two small kids herself. And we were really in the jam. I went on a welfare. And but the college sent us a check. And it wasn't much, but it helped keep my family going. And that's I'll never forget.
Yeah. So you came back.
I came back to work.
And Tommy was
down. Tommy was already here. You know, I know you came here to be a manager of the ground, and we had a good relation. We worked together. You know, I have no.
Did he change things from the different methods from what Slim had done, or?
Well, he had a different approach of things, and we worked. You know, me and Tom worked very closely together. Slim was a very good heart person. He like he would do anything, but he was very.
Strict.
And man, he wouldn't give you a minute. If you took off half hour, he'll take an hour off your pay. And now Tom was a different person. He, you know, if you need an hour to go to the doctor or something, say, go ahead. We just, that's the way it should be, you know. You work in a place 48 hours a week. You got to have some time to go to the doctor or something like that. Now Tom had a different style of than Slim. And it was great. He was well liked in the campus.
I know that he and Jack Coleman got along very well.
Yeah.
Can tell me a little bit about Jack Coleman as president, because I know he took a great interest in staff.
Well, like I said, what I know about Jack Coleman, just you know, in the campus and the type of person, I don't know how he done for the college, what he done for the college, but for the work, he was very. He liked to come out and talk to people. He would come out and have a lunch with us. When we built a new garage where we're in now, once in a while I would make a soup in the winter time. And we called Jack and said, Jack, you want to come down for a cup of soup? And he'd be down there, eat soup with us. We have the Christmas party we used to have every year. It's the grounds department, the Christmas party. But that became because me and Tom started that. We started having down the Ponder House, just a few people. And then we invited Jack, we invited Steve Carey, and we started to invite other people. And that became a pretty well-known Christmas party.
Yeah. And did Jack Coleman, was he responsible for benefits, starting benefits?
Yes, he did a lot. He gave us a lot of benefit, but he also he was put a... But it's tough sometimes to get some to Jack.
Like what?
Well, they were, he always, you know, would make sure. And one of the things I know I was involved in because the time we started the staff association.
Right.
And we were fighting to get the Friday after Thanksgiving. And he, you know, he would not respond to us. Just like say, no, you're not going to get it. You got enough. So there was a time there was me and Sue Newhall and Joe and I forgot, there were about five, six people that we were involved in, and we wrote a letter to the board manager about this. And Jack blew the stack because we went over his eight.
Sure.
So we all got a note to meet Jack up at his office in Roberts Hall. And we got a lecture that day. He was mad. Who think you people you are go over my head and this and that? And we just sat there, listened to Jack, and I'm done, you know. So we started to walk out, and I stopped, and I said, Jack, are we going to get that day after Thanksgiving? And he looked at me, you'll get the damn day.
You got it?
Yeah.
You got the day?
I said, that's why we came here. I said, I want to know. And I said, by the way, not just this year, we want this on our French benefit package.
Right.
That's on your French benefit. That's how we got to have the 3 days, 2 days of holiday at Thanksgiving.
So, did that come from him or the board of managers? Do you think they had?
Well, because, you know, the board manager, I guess, wrote to him and told me, look, we don't want to hear this little thing. You know, it's your problem.
Right.
Solve that. And I was very involved with the Staff Association for quite many years.
It started in the 60s, didn't
it? In the 60s, right.
Right, and was it an alternative to a labor union? Was it something about the Staff Association that was designed to prevent a union?
Right.
Yeah.
There was this union came around in Brimore and Arkham College. Villanova, I guess.
This would have been the 60s,
in
right?
The 60s.
In Coleman's in the 60s. And
during the Coleman administration.
60s, late 60s and 70s, yeah.
And so we decided, you know, if we don't want to go in the union, but we've got to have some kind of representation among ourselves to be able to defend yourself or speak about something. Because before, you know, you talk to your boss or something about something, you know. I mean, I fought for the four-week vacation. We got it, but it was too late for me because I was here 20 years by the time we got it. So after 20 years, you got 20 weeks anyway. I mean, 4 weeks anyhow.
Right.
But my point was that you shouldn't wait 20 years to get 4 week vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the benefit, you know, that we got that was for, you know, through
younger,
the Staff Association.
For the younger people, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, what did the administration think of the Staff Association?
Well, I think they... the administration, they agreed, you know, there was something where, see, a lot of time, the way I feel was, because there was no representative, the administration or the other people, they just didn't do anything. Okay. And of course, you know, with the faculty, they didn't fight for us, for the worker. They had their own setup, and, you know, they got much better benefit than we had. And I think that's what happened. When the Staff Association come in, we start to find out what else was out there. And if we find out that the faculty had the medical, you know, insurance. They had the pension plan. They had this and they had that. And geez, you know, where are we going to go when we retire? Just with nothing.
Right.
And so that's when we started, you know, we didn't want to take away from the faculty, but we felt that we worked for the college. If without the ground, without the housekeeping, without the maintenance, you wouldn't have no class. Nobody would come here.
Yeah.
And that's the way we saw things.
Was there a lot of sentiment for a labor union in housekeeping or grounds or maintenance?
I think in the housekeeping was a little more. Because them days, the housekeeping was kept a little more down than ground. And, you know, and still to today, they make less money. And even so, to the year I was involved with the staff, I always thought that it doesn't matter where the person works, that we should have a level of a pay. It don't matter if you work for housekeeping, for ground. Okay, carpenter, the other one, they're skilled labor. Maybe they should make a little more. But for housekeeping, is out there scrubbing the bathroom, scrubbing the hallway, and whatever. Mm-hmm. They work just like if we're out there raking the lawn.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that pay is different.
Mm-hmm.
But that stays the same till today. You know, there's still a little bit starting salary between the housekeeping ground. Mm-hmm. There is a difference. And I guess maybe something I didn't understand.
All right, let me. We talked a little bit about Jack Coleman, and Jack, again, he was responsible for a lot of the benefits that you did get. They happened during his administration.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then later you had Steve Carey.
Steve Carey. Yeah.
And then Robert Stevens. You have some comments about them and relation to your job.
With Steve Carey, he was he's still a good friend of mine today. He was I had a little thing going with Steve Carey one time when we brought up the subject about the tuition for the worker family.
Oh.
And he said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. He couldn't afford, the college can't afford. And my question was to Steve Carey, and I don't think he gave me an answer to today. I said, why is a faculty kids, children, is allowed to get an education and move up in the world? And I say, I'm a poor man, and I'm trying to improve myself, and I have a kid, but I can't afford it. No way. I said, with the salary I get in Haverford College, I could afford to send my kid to school. So my kid is going to stay down for the rest of their life. So it's a never-ending movement. And Steve just shook his head, and I said, you're right, but I cannot give you an answer.
But this year they
did
it.
But finally, after 20-some years, it came around, and which I think is great. I mean, you don't fight everything for yourself. You fight for other people that comes around, because benefit I'm getting today or better thing that happened maybe 100 years ago that somebody fought for us.
Right. So the labor union never really got a hold here.
No, the labor union over here, they came around, and I tell you, because on the ground I was kind of leader, they came to me, and one guy almost put a threat on me. He said, because he said, I understand, he said, if you say, you know, that you want a union, but we get a union. And I said, well, basically it's true. I said, but what's in it for me? I said, what am I going to get if we get a union? Well, he said, you're going to make more money. And I said, how much more? Well, he said, we'll guarantee you a $6 and a half an hour. And I said, yeah, that's thanks. I'm making $7 an hour now, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, why should I fight for the union? And yeah, but you don't understand. You wouldn't have to be doing this. I understand you do all kinds of work. Mm-hmm. And then for the union, I said, well, that's one of the things I don't like about the union. Because I like to do different things. I like to do a little stonemason, I like to do a little brick work, I like to do a little cement work, and I like to do whatever that comes up in our department. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I did watchman, I did work in here, watching there. I like to do different type of work. So now I said, the union's going to come tell me I cannot drive a tractor or I cannot go cut grass because it's not my job.
Yeah.
And I said, that's why I don't like a union. And I stood right in front of him. I wasn't as big as today. I was much a skinny guy them days. But it didn't matter. I stood up my ground. And I think that's maybe because we don't have unions.
Yeah.
I have something
more,
to do with.
More flexibility.
Yeah.
In the job.
Yeah.
Now, as I understand it, did Elmer Bogart succeed? He became a physical plant director, didn't he, in the 60s?
And I think it succeeded Mrs. Nugent.
Right. And then I have Elmer Bogart later, and then Pat Carinci after him.
After him. And there were people in between, but they were just filling.
Filling.
Like,
So you had, these were real physical plant directors.
Right. That's when...
They were like the way Norm Ricker is. Right.
Basically, yeah.
Right. And how did they impact the departments? I mean, were they different? They put a different spin on the way things operated, or did they leave you pretty much alone to?
Well, for the ground, I don't think it was much different. We still had to do our work.
Right.
I think it made a little different. We made a change on. So the ground had to do moving furniture. Mm-hmm. We used to set up the stage in a rubber saw for a musical concert or for a play or whatever. We had to go in and put up the side and the top and pull the organ out and do that whole setup. That was the grounds department responsibility. So that, when the new physics department came around, that was eliminated. They went under housekeeping. Because we, you know, we always kept the athletic department in, but moving all the furniture and piano and stuff like that, that wasn't an easy task.
So that went to housekeeping.
That went to housekeeping.
Were they unhappy about that when they?
Well, I guess made the housekeeper unhappy. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it did. Which until today they do the moving and, but my argument them day was, that like a mover, a piano, they should get a piano company to move. You know, they were just too heavy, like a move bigger refrigerator. Like the maintenance were buy a refrigerator for an apartment, and then the ground had to go get the old one in and bring the new one in, out and in. Like, and I said, why? Like on the commencement, we had to bring out the stage, and then the carpenter would be waiting over there with a hammer and a nail to nail them together. And then we, in the same time, we still had to set up the chair. That was our job.
Mm-hmm.
Housekeeping didn't help. Maintenance didn't help. We had to set all the chairs, take it down, take the stage back. And that's, I think, when the department, and I think, you know, you could go to Bocard or something, the Chick Range, and say, look, why can't they move their own stage? I mean, they're people like us.
Yeah.
And I think Norm done more than any of the other one. Norm is the greatest guy to be here. He couldn't understand when I talked to him the first time I saw him, why the ground's the only one to move chair. Why the ground have to do that? And he came around and said, everybody's going to work on commencement day.
Right. That's what you currently do now.
Yeah.
And
there was, you know, sometimes we were here at 6 o'clock at night on commencement day to finish bring all the chair in and get all the stuff out.
Yeah. And the college got into some real financial problems in the 70s with before they went co-ed, and they ran deficits in the budget. Did that affect your department at all? Did they cut you back at all? Or they?
Well, I wasn't involved and know about their finance problem.
Right.
But all I know, there were a few years our increase was very minimum. I mean, like a 5 cents an hour increase, not 5%, 5 cents. So I guess that was the year when, you know, the business wasn't going too well. And I don't know, like I said, with the new physical plant, the rat, we had, you know, our equipment, we got
new
better,
equipment.
Better equipment every day. Mm-hmm. Today, we're in one of the best equipped college around here.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it much easier for the, you know, for the work, to get the work done and to do things.
Sure, with the equipment. So things in the 80s, they were able to get a lot more equipment and trucks.
Lot more bad, yes.
And
yes.
Be able to replace old equipment that before. You don't miss the old days then?
certain thing I do.
Like what?
Well, like the the, I don't know, the way we do some of the work today, it's I wish some of my men now would go back and I could put them through the routine I went through. Not for long, for 1 week.
And
they would appreciate, maybe that's why I appreciate the thing today.
Yeah. Were there more accidents in the old days? Because you were describing how you climb up trees, and did people get hurt more often than they did now? No.
No, we didn't. I mean, not everybody climbed the trees. I was the only one, and Bobo sometimes would climb the trees.
Yeah.
We had a tree man that came to work on the cabins, like maybe, maybe 3-4 days in a year. They did just the center camp. We didn't prune all like we have now, the program.
But there wasn't more accidents because the equipment was faulty or because people did more manual
labor. No, but I think also you didn't have that many equipment to get hurt with. You know, you push a lawnmower, how can you get hurt? And so stuff like that. And, you know, our work was involved a lot. But in 1958, we had a big snowstorm in March, and they broke half our trees down. And I spent our whole summer just to go up and cut down the broken branches. Mm. And, you know, we do no special pruning. You just take down just the danger, the hanger off of the
tree. Now, today you wouldn't do that, would you?
No.
Today they'd bring in an outside people.
First of all, I don't think I have a man on the crew that be able to climb, except Eric. He would climb.
Right.
But see, today the insurance is different. I mean, what I did years ago, today, oh my God, you know, they would hang you. To, you know, to climb one of those big trees with no rope, no safety. And in a way, I consider myself lucky that I didn't fall and get hurt.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've done a lot of things them days that it's very unsafe to do. And you just did because you didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
I used to spray the trees around here.
All that chemicals and stuff.
And we use malathion, we use DDT. I mean, that was one of the things we used, and I used to mix DDT with my hand right in the water. And when I started to go to some of the seminary, that, you know, they show you what danger they are. And I think myself, well, I'm lucky that so far I didn't develop any of those things they say you develop.
Things are a lot safer now than they were in those days.
Yeah, there was no safety at all. I mean, you know, we'd be doing some of the weed kill in the summer, and it was, if it spill, you just wash them down, go down the creek and stuff like that. See, but not because you didn't know any better. See, there was nothing available for us to know those things.
Mm.
And so today, yes, we do have much more safety, much more caution when we work.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it quite a bit different.
And, well, all right. Well, thank you very much. I think this has been a very enjoyable interview. I hope you. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your years as at Haverford?
Well, all I can say is I've been a manager now for 9 years, and I enjoyed it very much. I don't think that I play the big role to everybody that I'm the manager of the ground. I'm still one of the worker, I would say. I try to do my thing is I work for the college. And like I said in the beginning, the college helped me when I need help. And I'm trying to repay back. I do the best job I can. And the college is always the best for me.
Come through,
and right now, like I said, with Norm on the job, he's one of the great guys that been in Haverford College. And I got a couple more years to work. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to.